Bigfoot Collectors Club presents
Terrifying Tales from Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt. I know a ghost story about you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special Halloween episode of Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness. I am your host, Michael McMillan, filling in for missing Bryce Johnson this week is, of course, our super producer, Riley Bray.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Oh,
yeah.
I stepped on your opening.
My main line is my name.
Really? Some episodes, it's all you get like, to say.
I like how, it's true, that happens. I like how you kind of came in, like, it was like, I was almost like Santa, and then it was like wavering a little, got the vibrato in there, was like drunk Santa, and then a little Transylvania, a little classic Michael. Yeah, I mean, hit a lot of notes in that open there.
Would we really be surprised if we learned that Santa and Dracula were one and the same?
Not a bit. Both.
How do you think that suit got so red by Christmas?
The blood Santa's, of children.
Yeah, he's been drinking blood all year, and then he atones for it by bringing all the kids presents.
I like this mythology. Yeah. Anyways, and then we were opening the episode, and then can you keep going?
No, I was saying, you figured it out. So, any word from Bryce this week?
Not on my end, no. How about you?
No, nothing. The task force, I got Mayor from Easttown on it. We're digging into it. She's expanded beyond telco and is helping us find Bryce. Guys, listen, we need some more tips. Hashtag, where's Bryce? At first, we thought something mysterious happened. Then we thought maybe he was just blowing us off. No, quiet all week. Very strange mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. But I have an eerie feeling that something's going to happen tonight. And I maybe it's just because it's Halloween.
Yeah, the veil is thin. You know, Bryce, if you're listening out there, we're waiting for you.
That's a great idea, actually. Before we bring in our guest, just Riley, if you and I could just, and listeners at home, just say with us, Bryce, if you're listening, we're here. Bryce, if you're listening,
we're here.
Bryce, if you're listening,
we're here. On time. Yeah.
Yeah, we're on time. Where are you? I don't know. It doesn't seem to be working. Well, God bless you, Bryce, wherever you are. We love you. Come home. Come back to us.
We're not mad.
We're not mad. I'm sorry I snapped last week. I was just scared. I was scared that maybe something was wrong. Because it's a spooky season, and I feel like something's up. But we got to get on with today's show, right?
Yeah, might as well.
It's Zombie
Show
Big
must go on.
Wait, who said that?
Oh, that was me. That was me.
I thought it was Bryce. That scared me. Okay. It's Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptid Crypt all month long. So we're discussing extra spooky stuff here on the free feed and on our Patreon, BCC The Other Side. If you love the spooky season, show BCC a little extra love by subscribing to the show and dropping us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app, Loki. If you do, we might read it on the air like this one that Riley's going to read for you right now.
I sure am. As soon as I get that text message, new listener, 5 stars. I listen to y'all every day during work, when I exercise, play Animal Crossing. I love the humor, the creepiness. I love it all. By Abby Gassage, I want to say, probably, hopefully. Thanks, Abby. Appreciate
thank
that.
You so much, Abby, and thanks for being a new listener. We appreciate it. Guys, give us those 5-star reviews. We love it. It gets the show to more people. It feeds a giant algorithm dragon, and we all know we have to feed the dragon.
Yes, which we pray and worship to every day.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's bring in our guest. Tonight's amazing guest is an actor that you know from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Happiest Season, my favorite holiday movie of 2020 and probably 2021, let's be honest, because I will watch it again. And he's a voice in the animated series Doug Unplugged, Club Scouts of All Timelines. Please welcome back to the show, Mr. Burl Moseley.
Trick or treat, mother, father, sisters, uncles, niece, nephews. Just want to cover the whole family, basically. Trick or treat to everybody. Trick or treat.
Burl, welcome back. Dude, you have not been, well, you that's not true, quite true, because you were a voice, a featured player in our Roswell series.
Oh, yes, yeah. Which was very wonderful. Such a good time.
Peak.
Thank you for having me.
Peak pandemic podcasting peak as pandy, far as the BCC
peak pandy,
goes.
As we're saying now. Yes.
Season one finale.
I think you were in. I'm going to actually look it up because I didn't do it.
Yeah.
I think you were one of our first 10 guests on the,
on
the show. What, it's like, been like 4 years. You were here for the Dover Demon.
Yeah. Was that number 8, number 9, something like that?
I think so.
That was 4 years ago. That's
that was a while ago. That was a minute ago.
Coming up on it.
And congratulations for, you know, still being around. A lot of podcasts fell off. Not gonna lie.
BCC gonna lie. They don't number exist 8. Anymore.
Don't yeah. Exist anymore. Yeah. Number 8. Oh, nice.
Number 8. You nailed it. Wow. Gosh. I mean, so you're an OG guest and you know, we talked a little bit back then, but you're pre Bullshit or Believe It, so we get to play that game with you for the first time tonight.
Ooh.
And okay. let's touch back in where you're at with the paranormal. Have you had anything happen to you in the past 4 years that you can't explain?
Oh, gosh. You know, I haven't had any paranormal experiences per se, but I have had like just weird interactions with animals when I'm not expecting it.
Great.
Like, I'll just be out at night and like a deer will show up or like a coyote will show up and just like guide me through the fog. Like there was one time I was coming down Mulholland and it was so foggy I couldn't see anything. And then like this coyote is just like, I'm like, is that a dog? And it's like, no, it's a coyote. And this coyote just looks at me. And then once I make eye contact with him, just starts guiding me down the hill through the fog.
That is so awesome.
Until I got to the bottom and I was safe. And then this thing disappeared. And I was like, you know, I'm a big anime guy. I was like, Princess Mononoke Coyote. I was like, what happened just now? That was so great. That was amazing. I just had the Mulholland spirit coyote guide me.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
That was your real life anime coyote guide moment.
I guess
right
so.
There.
I guess yeah, so. It was a thing of beauty.
Were you walking or were you driving?
No, I was in my car. And so, you know, like when you shine your car headlights on some fog, even if you use like, you know, your low beams as you're supposed to do, sometimes it's still very difficult to see. And, you know, that street can be very windy and, you know, so forth and so on. And so, but, hey, I live to tell the tale and I'm still here.
Mulholland, a notoriously spooky street, a beautiful street, but spooky as fuck for those of us who live in LA.
Yeah, so spooky they made a movie out of it.
That's right.
Quite a spooky one at that.
Certainly.
Now, that coyote story is the opposite of Riley's coyote story.
That's
true. Did you get bit?
No, I didn't get bit, but
I don't think we talked about this on the podcast.
Did we not talk about this on the podcast?
No, because I think you were actually like a little rattled for a minute.
I was a little shaken up.
We didn't want to bring it up.
Oh, no.
Well, so there's these coyotes in my neighborhood. And honestly, like I used to be, when I first moved here, I was like, wow, it's so mystical. And now I'm like, they're just kind of assholes. Like, they don't care anymore. They'll just walk right up to you. And so anyways, I was out in my driveway and I was getting something out of my van and I saw some coyotes look at me and start approaching. And so I kind of like made a sound and then they just like kind of stalked down a little bit and kept walking towards me. And I was like, oh, fuck this. And so I started backing up thinking that I was walking up into my driveway. But there's a stream in front of my house that's like a good 3 or 4 foot drop down.
I would say it's closer to like 5 feet.
It could be more like 4 or 5 feet, honestly. And what I actually did was back right off that ledge, like Wile E. Coyote style. Like the tables have turned. And like having that moment of like, oh, there's no ground beneath me. And then just falling so hard into the stream. It was really not great.
And then the coyotes, they stood on the edge there and they just laughed at you.
They just stood there. They still stood there and just watched me like crawl back out of the stream, and they were still just standing there staring at me like, you idiot. I was just like, these coyotes are jerks. Like,
the best part was all of this was caught on Riley's Ring camera.
Oh,
and we got to see the footage of him falling and then reappearing, just a frustrated man in a knitted hoodie, walking, just angry, walking. Fortunately, not injured, but just stubbornly and so angrily marching up towards his home.
Quite mad. Yeah, I walked to the door. I think I said to Chris, a bad thing happened.
I feel for you.
One coyote leads you down the cliff. The other leads you towards the cliff.
Trickster spirit. There you go. Right. We've embodied the coyote through our stories here.
A true Loki.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Any other animal? Are you like an animal guide guy?
I'm an animal whisperer 100%. Okay. I always have been.
Awesome.
I'm great with people's dogs. I'm great with like random animals out in the wild. Never been bitten by anything. I can always calm. Oh gosh. There's this one story, right? So I'm out in Utah doing some work, and you know, they like have us up in these cabins or whatever, right? And then there's like this van that's supposed to like take you down to like the main area every day, right? But one day, like, my call is later than everybody else, so I don't have to take the van. I'm just gonna walk in, right? There was this dog that lived next door, belonged to like the family next door or whatever, and this dog just had it out for all of us. Like, we had to run inside our cabin before this dog would like bite us or whatever, because I don't know, she was just very aggressive. And so I go to walk down to like the main area, and this dog is just in the middle of the road. Her name was Lady. This dog is just in the middle of the road growling at me. And I'm like, this is it. This is the moment. This is when I get mauled. Like, this is when, you know, they're going to have to like cart me off out of here, patch me up, get my rabies shot. Like, I'm going to have to do all these things. Right. And so I remember the owner, I remember them like saying, like shouting Lady no, and the dog like not doing anything. Right. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try that. And so, you know, I put all that bass in my voice and I was like, Lady no. And the dog was just like, you know, and I was walking, giving her a wide berth. She just sat in the middle of the road right there. And then like, there was a moment where like, you know, her muscles tensed, and I was like, here we go. I'm going to have to fight a dog.
This dog?
This was like, she was like, you know, nothing against pits. I think pits are wonderful dogs. She happened to be a pit, and she was of good size. I'm not good with like dog weight, but she was like, maybe 80 pounds.
I was going to say 80 pounds, probably.
Big dog. Yeah. A dog you want to fist
fight. You know, not a dog you want to fist fight.
You're doing well with guessing like numbers that the root is 8. So it's probably exactly 80 pounds.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But yeah, so basically I had to like, you know, maintain eye contact that whole time, not show my teeth, because I know that's a form of aggression. And I just said, Lady, no, over and over. I did not turn my back on her, even once I passed. Then I like walked backwards until like I was out of eyesight. And then I was like, okay. Meanwhile, sweat is just like pouring from every pore on my body. But I made it out, and it was my good animal communication skills.
Well done, by the way. You are putting into practice bear techniques that we talked about a few weeks ago here on the podcast. Okay.
A lot of good practical life advice on this podcast.
I mean, also, if you get attacked from a bear after listening to that episode, we're not responsible. I felt a little weird later. I was like, should we be giving advice about how to avoid bear attacks? Probably not. But Lady, let's get a fence. Let's get a fence for Lady. She'll be happy. Yeah. Everyone will be happier.
Yeah.
All right.
Super
well,
intense, though. So it was like not leashed in any way. It was just like down this dog.
Oh no.
Man, that's a moment. That's,
yeah, it was a real moment. It was one of those like time slowed down, and I was like, this could be it.
It is rare that we today as humans like face an animal that we're like, this might eat me, if not at least kill me. Mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Like 200 years ago, that was happening every Wednesday.
Sure. Yeah.
Like instead of a podcast coming out. Once. Yeah, there you go. I was going to say instead of podcast dropping, there were animals jumping into your path who wanted to eat you.
Hey, you guys want some berries? I'm going to go get some berries.
Yeah. No.
He's never heard from again.
Berry Wednesday. Your brother faced down a mountain lion?
Yeah, he was out in the desert. He was out in the desert, and he was like, my brother likes shooting. He's into, you know, like target shooting.
Yeah,
he was out at a shooting range in the desert. And he was like far away from everybody, and he was all alone. Like he couldn't like call out to anyone, and a mountain lion just like approached him, and there was like a big like fence post. So he got up onto the fence post and just like put his arms up all big and just like tried to make himself big. And the mountain lion just kind of like checked him out and then just turned and walked away.
I was like, Hakuna Matata.
It was very much that, actually, when you think about it.
He made himself look like a meerkat riding a warthog.
Yeah. The lion was like, never mind.
I'll see you later.
Done that. Seen this one.
Lifted up a log. There were some grubs you could eat there.
He was like, hey, dig in.
Speaking of little treats,
yeah,
it's Halloween. Burl. As a matter of fact, I don't know why I'm asking this question, because I happen to know that this man loves candy corn, unlike
most. I love it.
Really?
And you know, yeah, it's so funny. I just learned like maybe like a few years back that there's like some, you know, uprising against candy corn. Meanwhile, people love honey. All candy corn is little honey droplets. That's all it is.
Is candy that what corn it is?
Tastes like honey. Tastes exactly like honey.
It's true. It is a honey
candy
flavor.
Candy corn tastes nothing like like corn. It just tastes like honey. So people love honey, hate candy corn. Doesn't make any sense to me. They're lying.
I think it's you're right. It's like a trendy thing to hate. You know.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy.
There was
people that hate on candy corn actually love candy corn. Full stop.
There was a moment on set where somebody brought out cupcakes around the Halloween season. This is back on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I remember this very well. I remember this very well.
And walked out, set up a bunch of cupcakes with chocolate cupcakes with candy corn on each one of them.
Yeah, just one single candy corn adorned each cupcake, right?
I walk out to craft service table, and I find this man, Burl Moseley, eating the very last candy corn of all the candy corn that he had gone down the row and picked off off the top of each cupcake.
Now, in my defense, I waited.
It was the like most insane hour. Thing I've ever seen.
I waited like an hour because I was like, I don't want these cupcakes, but I do want that candy corn. And there was no candy corn anywhere else, right? And so I waited like an hour, and people only took like a few cupcakes. I was like, nobody wants these cupcakes. They're going to get tossed soon. Yep. And so I was like, all right, let me just like take these candy corns. Next thing I know, I'm like, you know, Michael comes and sees me, and I'm like, shh, don't say nothing, man. We're back at the cast chairs, and Rachel comes out. She's like, did somebody just individually eat the candy corns off of all the cupcakes? And I'm like, yeah, it was me. What you want to do about it?
It was, to be
fair, I didn't
fair,
have a lot of options.
One of the craziest things I've ever seen happen on set.
I said, I wanted candy corn. I didn't have anything else.
They would have brought you a bowl of candy corn. 100%.
Look, man, I don't know. Like, my chair didn't have my name on it. Like, nothing's for certain. Like, you know, right?
The candy corn was in the rider. There was no candy corn.
It's back in the day.
I could so see that moment and that logic. And fully, like, so much stuff gets wasted, and you're like, I really want those candy corn. They're just going to throw it away.
They're just going to toss
it. No one's even going to know.
Yeah, the thing that I didn't want to see, I didn't want to come back in another hour and just, like, pass the garbage can and see them in there with the candy corn on top. Like, that would have broken my heart.
Just a single tear.
Yeah. It's like the single Denzel tear. Just like,
right.
Yeah, he had to, you know, he took justice into his own hands. He was like...
Had to. Had
he
no
went
choice.
Vigilante on the no candy
choice.
Corn.
Michael, did you blow his cover? Or no, she just...
No, he was good. You know, he did give me the look when she came in. You know, he gave me that look that criminals do, you know, when like the police come in, question him, they look to see who's looking at each other. He looked right over at me, I looked right over at him, and I was like, I gotta say it. I gotta say something. She's gonna blame the crew, and I was like, and I don't want her to do that.
As a crew member, we thank you for that.
Yeah. Hey,
God, one of the fucking craziest and funniest things.
That's hilarious. I love
that's
that.
Great.
truly endeared me. Truly proved that Burl is one of the weirdest people I know and one of my most favorite people. So when you were trick-or-treating as a kid, Burl, were you like, ooh, give me that candy corn? What were you, first of all, where did you grow up? Remind us where you grew up and then what trick-or-treating was like in your neighborhood.
So all over, but the places I remember trick-or-treating the most, we lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico for a little bit. I remember trick-or-treating there as a kid. And we also were in Virginia, like Fairfax County, Virginia. I remember trick-or-treating there for a little bit. And back in those days, I really had no preference. I was just excited to get candy. You know what I mean? I was just like, but I do remember like being ridiculously successful and like filling up that little plastic pumpkin, like with candy or even like a pillowcase.
Yeah. You gotta go pillowcase. As we've said on this show before, like the plastic pumpkin is not enough. That's not enough for any child.
Yeah. And sure enough, you know, you pour it out and then my mom would be like, pick out your favorites. And I was like, okay. And so I'd be like, oh, I like this. I like this. I like this. You know, basically like, you know, a third of the candy I liked. I was like, all right, this is what I want. And she's like, all right, cool. Two thirds of that candy went directly in the trash.
No, this is why it happened. This is what created the cupcake.
It's all coming together.
And I was like, you know, as an adult, like I get it. You know, you don't want your kid eating like all of that candy. But I was like, well, at least I got to keep my favorites. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least I got to.
We had the candy relegated to the kitchen pantry after my sister and I sifted through everything, traded and decided what was what and what we didn't want. And then we would make a pile for my dad, you know, because like, there's dad tax when it comes at least in our house, when it comes to Halloween, like dad gets like a cut.
Like you do.
Yeah. Teaching and then, early lessons about the state to the kids.
Yeah. As you should.
Yeah.
And then our remaining candy would go into like personal, I don't remember what they were in, if they were in a bowl or just still in our bag, but like that went into the kitchen pantry and like we were only allowed, like we basically ate the rest of the candy between Halloween and Christmas, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was rationed out over the course of probably 6 or 7 weeks.
Wow.
That's a good method.
That's good. That's not bad. Not bad.
Yeah,
I was actually expecting that it was going to last longer, but that's not bad. It's not bad.
I mean, it could, it may have. I mean, but we probably got down to like Tootsie Roll Pops, and then I was Tootsie Rolls. You know,
you can only
and I was
have so
like,
many. You can only have
I'm
so
not
many.
Doing this. Honey bees. What were those called? Like the honey? It was like a not candy corn, but there was like a chewy honey. Is it Zagnut? What is it? I'm gonna Google it.
Oh, I've heard of Zagnut before, but I don't know. Honey. I don't know the. B
candy,
the B one
with a B on it. This is what I go. This is what I'm googling.
Honey candy with a B on it. Tell me, Google.
What about Oh,
I'm
here
sorry,
it is.
I can't
a bit
find
of honey.
Any results from it. Oh, a bit of honey.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I remember.
Bit of honey. Ugh. Too chewy. Too hard and too chewy at the same time.
I always loved me. A Milky Way, Three Musketeers. Oh. Those were the best. Twix. I love those. Skittles, M&M's, like anything that like I could, you know, that I saw like on a daily basis or whatever, you know.
Yeah, something that you would see in a store.
Mm-hmm.
Like bit of honey. You never saw that at a 7-Eleven.
No, I'm like, get this away from me. Anytime somebody offered me a candy apple or something, I was like, keep it.
I don't want that shit.
I don't want
it. What is this, Disneyland?
Keep it.
Am I on my pumpkin?
Main Street USA right now? Yeah.
No,
that's
like,
precious real estate.
I went through a lot of trouble to make this. And I'm like, well, you're going to go through a lot of trouble to get it away from me.
As an adult now, do you think the adults that gave away like weird candy were doing it on purpose? Like, could you really think,
that's a good question. Know? I feel like they must have had like the noblest of intentions in their hearts. And they just they're like, well, some kids like it, and that's who I'm making it for, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think just people are out of touch. I think some old people were just like, this is what I used to get to the general store.
I used to get a bag of apple slices and a bag
like
of carrots.
They'd never heard of a Nutrageous before, you know what I mean?
I don't know what that is.
Right, that's way too radical 90s.
Yeah.
Whoppers? Oh, I also loved Whoppers, those Whoppers.
I not a Whopper guy, but I appreciate those who crunch. Are. Love my uncle was
came around
Whopper
to Whoppers
guy.
Later in life.
Malted balls.
Whoppers. Yeah. Everlasting gobstopper.
Oh, I love that.
I loved a good
Jolly Ranchers.
Watermelon only, please.
Woo woo. That's a real man right there. That's a real man.
What
right
about
there.
What about Halloween haunts? Anything that scared you? Which Halloween creature scared you the most, Burl? If you were thinking, right. Okay, this could happen to me, what would it be?
I'm going to be real with you right now. None of that stuff really scared me because I was just like not scared of it. Like Frankenstein, I was like, okay, this is dumb. He's slow. I can outrun him. Vampires, I was like, they only come out at night. I'm in bed. Like the mummy, I'm like, I'm not going to any tombs. Werewolves, it was like full moon. I was like, all right, full moon. It's one day of the month. I was like, I'm good. But I was terrified. My dad had this like latex mask that he kept in like the drawer of like his office desk that he would bring out every Halloween. And it was so scary that when he would wear it, my sister and I would cry immediately. Like we would immediately cry, and the fear of God was inside me, and like it was that like I didn't know that it wasn't my dad, and like
you couldn't be totally sure. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so I just screamed. I was like, ah! You know, we were beside ourselves, and he had to like take it off, and he's laughing, and he's like, no, it's me. See, and we're like, oh God, it is you. Okay, okay. And then he puts it back on, and we're like, no, please, get away from me. Nah. And so finally, he had to retire it, but he still kept it in that same drawer. And I remember when I'd be playing games with my sister, I'd be like, should we test the strength of will that we have now that we're like a year older? You know, we do this every year. Like, should we go and see how long we can look at that mask? And so we'd go like, pull out the drawer, you know, and the mask could be like turned over, you know? And so we had to like turn it over and stare at it and see how long we could do it. You know, we could never make it more than like 45 seconds, but.
Wow.
Woo, that
a quick question.
Me. That
and scary. Be honest.
Yeah.
Did your dad kill Sidney Bristow's mother?
Yes. And he also brought her back to life.
Oh.
So I feel nice. Like it cancels it out. It cancels yeah. it
fair
out.
Fair enough. Yeah. And then she was out. Later killed by Ghostface.
Yeah.
What or
part-time necromancer.
Cotton Weary. Was that
Cotton
his name
Weary.
From Scream?
From Scream? Wasn't that Scream 2?
Yeah. Yeah, Sidney. Yes, yes. He comes in Scream 2, but he's set up in Scream 1. What
Hello,
is this,
Sidney?
That's pretty good. What is this mat? What was the mask? And also, your dad kept it in his desk drawer year round.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I and then there was like one time we went to look for it and it was just gone. Right, but yeah, it was like his go-to Halloween mask. I can't really describe it. It was kind of like. Imagine Frankenstein's face, but flesh colored, and like one of the eyeballs is like pointed upwards, you know what I mean? And one mm-hmm. of the eyeballs is like looking at you. It was very strange. And there's like, you know, a bunch of like staples in the face and like cuts and bruises on it. It
so
was
like,
kind of like.
So it was like a human face, like a grotesque.
Yeah, yeah,
human
like
face.
like an undead zombie meets Frankenstein, kind of, you know, like somebody. Reanimated a zombie and like decided to staple up their wounds or something like that. It was quite scary. And it had like the fake hair and everything too. Oh,
this sounds very similar to my own father's mask. We're learning something tonight. Mm. Does every father carry around a Halloween latex mask year round?
They give you one at the hospital. Yeah. When they give you the child.
That's what happens. You don't find out until you have a baby.
Right.
That yeah. like the mother is handed a baby, but the father is handed a latex mask to which he will scare the baby for the rest of its life. Like that's mm-hmm. this weird ritual that happens. But my father had a flesh colored latex. Text mask the eyes were cut out
yeah,
so that
yeah.
like there was no like but it was just an old man with frizzy white like bozo hair coming around the mm-hmm. sides bald mm-hmm. on top mm-hmm. and he called him Fred And occasionally when we were sitting at the kitchen table, he would wander out, probably having a cigarette, and then he would put the mask on and just stare at the window until one of us noticed and screamed and then shit our pants.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
That's a pretty funny thing to do as a dad, I gotta say.
That's scary.
Yeah. Fred, that motherfucker, that guy. He hung out in the basement.
Come back again and like make a joke about like, was Fred here or something like that?
Probably, yeah. What are you all upset about? Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to get into a spooky story tonight for Halloween. But before we do that, Burl, you've never played our game.
Oh.
Because I almost said it. Because we invented it after you were on the show. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down a list of phenomena, rapid fire style.
Okay.
Now, typically, if you're into it, if you're open to it, I should say, you would say, believe it.
Okay.
If you're not open to it, you'd say bullshit.
Bullshit, right, yeah.
And we call it bullshit or believe it.
Okay.
But a listener this month on Twitter, Jeff, the Peaceful Warrior, at Peaceful Warrior, suggested that for Halloween, for Zombie Bigfoot's Cryptic Crypt Month, we should change this name of this game to Ghoul Shit.
And believe it.
Or believe it. Yeah.
It is. That's exactly right.
There it is.
So if you're open to it, you're going to say boo leave it. If you're not open to it, you're going to say ghoul shit. Got it?
I'm not saying that. I'm kidding. Let's do it.
All right. Bro Mosley, on your mark.
Okay.
Get set.
Bullshit, believe it. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
And there's no in between. You got to come down one or the other. All right.
Okay. Okay.
Ghosts.
Believe it.
UFOs.
Believe it.
Bigfoot.
Ghoul shit.
Vampires.
Ghoul shit.
Shadow people.
Believe it.
Loch Ness Monster.
Ghoul shit.
Gray aliens.
Believe it.
Werewolves.
Ghoul shit.
Parallel universes.
Believe it.
Zombies.
Ghoul shit.
Shapeshifters.
Ghoul shit.
Heaven.
Believe it.
Hell.
Ghoul shit.
Yeti.
Believe it.
Astrology.
Ghoul shit.
ESP.
Believe it.
Witches.
Ghoul shit.
Demons.
Believe it.
Atlantis.
Believe it.
Mothman.
Ghoul shit.
The Jersey Devil.
Ghoul shit.
The Biblical Devil.
Ghoul shit.
Life on other planets.
Believe it.
Life after death.
Believe it.
Well done, Bro Mosley.
Hey!
A successful round, Halloween round, I guess it's now redundant to call it that, of ghoul shit or believe it. All right, so ghoul shit on Bigfoot, but believe it on Yeti?
Yeah.
Explain yourself,
like,
sir.
Well, here's why. I feel like, you know, Bigfoot did exist, but I feel like he passed away some years ago. But the Yeti, I think, is still out there because he has enough things in his environment to sustain him.
So you think Bigfoot was just like one man or one weird man wandering around who just died of old age, or?
Yeah. Yeah. Or if it was like an actual Bigfoot, it's since passed and was not able to make offspring. So,
well, but he had to be offspring from something.
You know, chicken egg.
Oh, chicken egg. Okay. Fair. What else did we have on this list that struck me? There was another one. Demons.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You ever seen an exorcism?
What's going to say about that? What's that?
You ever seen an exorcism? You ever danced
no, sir,
with the
I
devil
have not.
In the pale moonlight?
Not that, yes.
Ooh, oh, man. I've seen some crazy stuff.
Wait, have you actually seen an exorcism? Videos. Yeah. Please.
Not in person. Please. Not in person. But I've seen, like, you know what they call them, you know, the police video from interrogating somebody, and they got like the camera on and they're like, you know, asking them, and they are just not right.
Yeah. Are like, we talking one of those like YouTube videos of like 10 scariest moments caught
this
on
is,
film?
This is before YouTube. It was pre-YouTube. It was like one of those programs where they're like, you know, something's not going, you know, something like possessions and stuff like that.
Top 10 arrested demons.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was very terrifying. I was like, that's disturbing. And then you're like, is it mental illness? But then you're like, no, because they'll bring in a priest and they'll do an exorcism and then the person is fine.
Yeah. I mean, and also, like, we don't know what consciousness is, so how can we know what demons are within the consciousness, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a very
fuzzy line. To look into the subgenre of police interrogation room exorcisms because I don't know anything about this.
Do it. I bet Bryce
is all over this. Wherever Bryce is. Bryce, can you hear us? Bryce.
Sitting in a hotel room watching police
That's probably true.
There he is. There he is.
He's just binging.
He's just taking some me time. Yeah.
Paranormal Con on camera.
That's why, you know that movie, was it Constantine? Constantine's not a movie. Yes. It's a documentary.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, this week's story of high strangeness with Burl Moseley. Burl Moseley.
Burl. Oh, I see what you did there. Oh,
that was good.
All right, we're back, and it's time for this week's story of high strangeness with Burl Moseley. We could also have gone with Girl Moseley for your wolf man that you're not afraid of. Now, I've asked Burl to play a couple roles in tonight's story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is kind of a juicy one. It's not quite a deep dive. It could probably be a deep dive. This is a story that I've been fascinated with for a while. It's a good Halloween story because it's a haunted house story. We got more requests to do some of these during the month of October. So here you go. I'm delivering on this one. And I'm excited to discuss this one with the two of you because like Amityville Horror, this is one that has like spread its mystical claws into the like trenches, the deep trenches of pop culture.
Mm. Oh, I'm excited to hear what this All is. Right. I have no idea.
So here we go. Got to clear my throat.
That's really good. Werewolf. That's good. Yeah, clear it out.
Over the course of 18 terrifying months in the late 1970s, an English working-class single mother and her four children were targeted by an otherworldly entity in their home at 284 Green Street in Enfield, North London. The haunting would capture the imaginations of the press, paranormal investigators, including demonologists Ed and Lorraine Warren, and skeptics alike. What happened to the Hodgson family was either one of the greatest paranormal instances of the 20th century or one of its biggest hoaxes. This is the story of the Enfield Poltergeist.
Damn, we're tackling classics tonight.
Now, does any of this ring a bell, Burl?
No.
Have you seen a movie called The Conjuring 2?
Oh, I've seen the trailer.
Now,
pretty much seen the movie, though. Actually, it's one of those trailers. You kind of get all the beats.
Yeah. So you know the pop culture icon, horror icon, The Nun, correct?
Oh yes.
So The Nun is the enemy of Conjuring 2, a complete fabrication by James Wan and whoever wrote that script. Mm-hmm. The Nun and the demon who disguised itself as the nun, Valak, had nothing to do with this true story. But the what happened in Enfield and the family are all the basis. That's the stuff that it's based on, right?
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah, got it.
And Conjuring 2 also opens with the Amityville Horror stuff and makes the artistic leap of linking the same demon to Enfield as the demon in Amityville. But in reality, the two had nothing to do with one another. So I'm reminding our listeners to set that aside.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
So, concerning the Enfield poltergeist, the trouble began on August 30th, 1977, in the bedroom of the two elder Hodgson girls, Margaret, 12, and Janet, 11. The girls awoke to the sound and sensation of Janet's bed rattling and shuffling about the floor. They called for their mother, Peggy, who was raising her four kids, Margaret, Janet, and their little brothers, Johnny, 10, and Billy, 7, after divorcing their father and working hard to scrape two pennies together. Peggy checked in on the girls, who were frightened, but saw no evidence of a bed spontaneously moving on its own accord. So she scolded the girls for being cheeky and told them to go to sleep. Now, sidebar. I find it interesting that in this story, much like in the Amityville haunting in Long Island, that both happened around the same time, 70s, mid to late 70s, and both of them involved broken families. The paranormal activity in each instance was somewhat similar, and both were very famous. As we've already stated, both are surrounded by controversy, and both have had, you know, big Hollywood blockbusters based on them. But I wonder if beneath the sensation in the press of these stories is this idea, this cultural phenomenon that's happening, which is like divorced families, single moms remarrying and having to move on with their lives and like raise kids on their own or raise them with a strange, quote unquote, strange man in the house. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there's something linked between these horror stories and that cultural phenomenon that was happening at the time. Just a little thing I don't have an answer to, but I find it a little interesting.
Okay. I like
it. It's an interesting observation. You know, it's like, I don't know. Does the trauma of the broken family invite this thing in, or is this a manifestation of that, like in our collective minds,
right?
Like why we attach to these stories, because that was the first time that, you know, you were seeing divorce in those kind of numbers,
right? Or and is it society. Is it the press latching on to like this broken home is already haunted because this marriage? You know what I mean? Now, obviously,
that narrative,
Obviously, we have much more modern opinions about this now, and I'm not scolding people who have divorced their...
Oh, no, definitely not.
You know, but I just feel like there seemed to be, you know, maybe a little bit more of a prejudice against divorced families in the 70s.
Definitely, yeah.
I don't know. Hmm. So, the next evening, August 31st, Johnny and Janet heard a shuffling in the bedroom. They called for their mother. Something seemed to be lurking about. "Mommy, mommy, mommy," Peggy shouted from below. "Quit mucking about." But when Peggy heard a loud noise, the children screaming, she finally went upstairs to check on the situation. What she discovered when she entered the children's bedroom was the absurd sight of their heavy oak dresser sliding across the floor, propelled by an unseen force. Peggy tried moving the dresser back into place, but it pushed back, headed towards the bedroom door, as if its goal was to block it and lock them all in. Years later, a grown-up Janet who witnessed the event would recall this moment to Telegraph reporter Will Storr.
"She was dumbfounded, really. She pushed it back and it started to move again. She tried to push it back again and it wouldn't move. So she said, 'Right, we'll go downstairs.' We was very nervy. There was a funny atmosphere in the house. And then the knocking started."
The strange knocks seemed to bounce around the house and come from within the walls or under the floorboards. Peggy's growing concern that a burglar was lurking about led her to gather up the kids and rush them over to the neighbor's house. The home belonged to a couple named Vic and Peggy Nottingham. Now, Vic was a large, burly man. He went into the Hodgson house to locate the source of the strange noises, but was baffled by what he encountered. Burl.
"I went in there, and I couldn't make out these noises. There was a knocking on the wall, in the bedroom, on the ceiling. I was beginning to get a bit frightened."
Unsure of what to do, Peggy phoned the police. Police Constable Carolyn Hayes investigated the scene, and she herself witnessed a chair moving by an unseen force. She searched the area for hidden wires, but found no evidence of a prank. It was weird. She later told the press,
"The chair was by a sofa, and I looked at the chair, and I noticed it shook slightly. I can't explain it any better. It came off the floor. Oh, nearly half an inch, I should say. And I saw it slide off to the right about 3.5-4 feet before it came to rest. I'm absolutely convinced that no one in that room touched that chair or went anywhere near it when it moved. Absolutely convinced."
With no crimes having been committed, the police shrugged off the situation, said, "We don't know what to do," and left. Hodgson's were on their own, and the paranormal activity was only getting started. Peggy contacted the UK rag, the Daily Mirror, hoping that they might be of some help. They sent over a team that included photographer Graham Morris, who hoped to snap a photo of objects moving around the room. But when the mirror arrived, nothing happened. After waiting around for something exciting to take place, the Daily Mirror team packed it in and went out to the car. The moment they reached their vehicle, the poltergeist woke up, and it got to work, flinging small objects about the room. The Hodgsons called them back in, and Graham Morris was struck in the eye with a Lego. Morris said,
"It was chaos. Things started flying around. People were screaming."
Morris started snapping pictures, including a couple photos of Janet allegedly levitating and being tossed about the bedroom. Now, I want you guys, if you're near a computer, to Google Enfield poltergeist. If you're listening at home, pull over the car before you do this. Now, you're going to Google, and we'll put this up on the Instagram. Boys, I want you to do the same.
Okay.
And almost immediately what will come up are these photos of Janet allegedly levitating and being tossed around. Enfield poltergeist. There are pictures of her. It looks like she's almost jumping off the bed. I don't know if you guys are seeing this stuff. Screaming terror.
I've seen these.
Yeah, I'm going to send these over to you guys right now if you can't find them.
Don't they even show some of these images at the end of the
credits?
In the credits?
Yeah. So, allegedly, these photos, you'll see there, she's like up in the air screaming. The children are huddled in the other bed. She's, this like red dressing gown. Now, it's tough when you look at these because she could just be jumping off the bed.
Right, right.
But the photographer claimed that she was being thrown around the room.
Whoa.
And these pictures went into the Daily Mirror, and this story started to catch fire. So after the Daily Mirror began reporting the story, and they would continue to serialize the events at Green Street over the next 18 months, the BBC came in to record a radio interview and investigation. BBC reporter Roz Morris, she claimed,
"After the girls went to bed, there was a very loud crash upstairs in the bedroom.
And then she went upstairs to discover that a heavy chair had been thrown 9 feet across the room.
Something chucked that chair across the room. I'm convinced of that."
And she felt, you know, this thing was too heavy for a little girl or a little boy to, like, throw 9 feet across the room. So let's pause here and ask, why the Hodgsons? Why now? Well, we may never know for sure, but allegedly Janet and her big sister Margaret had been playing with an Ouija board in the days leading up to the start of the haunting. So one prevailing theory is that it's possible they opened a portal to the other side that allowed a spirit to walk through.
There it is.
Now, whatever caused this activity, it was enough to pique the interests of the Society of Psychical Research. You may remember these guys from last year's story about Borley Rectory, BCC 134, with Mike Mitchell. The Society of Psychical Research was founded in the 1800s and has boasted Arthur Conan Doyle as one of its members. Now, Maurice Gross and Guy Leon Playfair investigated the Enfield poltergeist and would witness numerous strange activities over the months of the haunting, but things started a little slow at first. When Gross and Playfair arrived at the house, they sat in the living room for a long while, waiting for something to happen. After a period of inactivity, Gross claimed that Legos and marbles started spontaneously shooting about the room. The children's toys were hot to the touch, and the investigators witnessed a t-shirt fly off a table and across the room as well. Then the sounds returned, the strange knocking that bounced around the house, inside the walls, under the floors, above the ceilings, impossible to pinpoint. Bouncing from room to room, you hear it there, you run in, and suddenly it's coming from the other side of the house. The SPR returned multiple times to check in on activity at the house, and the poltergeist delivered. Furniture moved about the room, the sounds of disembodied dogs barking came out of nowhere, and then there were the voices, specifically the voice that came out of little Janet. Janet began channeling the deep, gruff voice of an entity named Bill. Bill claimed, through Janet, that he used to live in the house, but died suddenly from a brain hemorrage. We're about to play a recording of the members of the SPR interviewing, interrogating Janet as she channeled Bill. Now remember, she was only 11 years old at the time of this recording. Now, Riley, if you cue it up to minute 2:04 on that YouTube video, we're going to take a listen to the Society of Psychical Research interviewing young Janet as she channeled Bill.
I want you to tell me whether you remember what happened to you when you died. Just before you died and just after you died.
All right, that you can stop it there, Riley. So
yikes.
Creepy as fuck. He said, I tasted blood. And then I forget the next thing he says, but then he says he died in the chair in the corner downstairs.
Whoa.
That's an 11-year-old girl making that voice.
Whoa.
Jesus.
Whoa.
That's some scary shit, man. I don't know.
So, Janet claimed as Bill that he died in a chair sitting in the corner in the downstairs living room from a hemorrhage. And this fact... Oh, he said he tasted blood, went blind, and then he died of a hemorrhage. So this fact would later be confirmed. A man by the name of Bill Wilkins had lived and had died of a brain hemorrhage in the house at the age of 72, years earlier. And the corroboration of the story came from Bill Wilkins' son, Terry. Meanwhile, the levitations and the telekinetic activity involving furniture continued. The children would sometimes be yanked out of their beds at night. During one instance, one of the children screamed as they were coming down the stairs that they couldn't move. The adults looked back and saw one of her legs sticking out back behind her. She said someone had her leg. The adults ran up the stairs and pulled on her arms, but they couldn't move her. It's often said that poltergeist activity tends to center around a pubescent female in the home. And indeed, the activity seemed to peak on and around December 15th of 1978 when Janet got her first period. Janet recalled the trauma of the activity years later while speaking to the Daily Mail. She said,
"The levitation was scary, but you don't know where you were going to land. And I remember a curtain being wound around my neck. I was screaming. I thought I was going to die. My mum had to use all her strength to rip it away. The man who spoke for me, Bill, seemed angry because we were in his house."
Eventually, the activity seemed to settle down after a priest was finally brought in to perform an exorcism. Eventually, the Hodgsons moved out of the house. But activity on Green Street never truly died. The next owner, Claire Bennett, said that her sons used to hear people talking downstairs. And they moved out 2 months after moving in. Her son, Shaka, who was only 15 at the time, later said, Burl,
"The night before we moved out, I woke up and saw a man come into the room. I ran into Mom's room and said, 'We've got to move.' And we did."
Of course, the Enfield poltergeist tale doesn't come without bucket loads of skepticism. Janet and Margaret have admitted to tricking Gross and Playfair from time to time, playing pranks and pretending that they were seeing things or things were happening when they weren't. But they claimed that the SPR members always caught them in the act, and that sometimes they made stuff up just because they felt pressure to make something happen. Other skeptics claim that the reports of telekinetic activity were greatly exaggerated and that Janet was just a natural ventriloquist who knew how to throw her voice. But even the flaws in the story and the admissions of these little white lies by Janet and Margaret can't account for everything. At the end of the day, over 30 people witnessed unexplained phenomena during those 18 months at 284 Green Street in Enfield. And Janet says the experience has stayed with her whole life. After all, it wasn't easy being known as the Ghost Girl.
"It was odd. I had a short spell in the Maudsley Psychiatric Hospital in London, where they stuck electrodes in my head, but the test proved normal."
As for whether she was really channeling the ghost of Bill Wilkins, Janet says yes.
"It lived off me, off my energy. Call me mad if you like. Those events did happen. The poltergeist was with me, and I feel that, in a sense, he always will be."
And that, in a nutshell, is the story of the Enfield poltergeist.
Well told.
Bravo.
Forgiveness for my accents. Burl Moseley, what the hell is that?
What? Oh! What is that?
Burl?
Yes?
Burl!
Hello?
Oh, no. Not another member of this podcast being sucked into another dimension. Burl, come back.
What if we just ended the episode there?
That might as well. Happy Halloween, everybody.
All right, everybody, good night.
I don't know, Burl, what do you think about when you hear a story like this? And there's obviously a lot more reading you can do on this subject.
Oh, sure.
Focus mostly on the spooky stuff because it's Halloween week.
Yeah.
You know, but there's people, magicians and skeptics who are like, this is bullshit. But there's a lot of people. That cop signed an affidavit that she saw a chair move on its own will.
When that man's voice came out of that little girl's body, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Little girls don't talk like that.
I mean, she's a natural talent.
I've met plenty of 11-year-olds, even when I was 11, and none of them talk like that ever. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild stuff. And the fact that, like, why would those little girls know that a man named Bill died in that house from a brain hemorrhage? I mean, I guess the skeptic could say maybe they heard about it or their mom was talking about it, but I don't know, man.
When I was 11, I couldn't even pronounce the word hemorrhage.
Yeah, that's like, if that's a hoax, that is the like prototypical preteen goth right there. Yeah. That's a
yes.
Well done.
Totally.
Next level.
Yeah, it's similar to Amityville, where it got, this was basically the Amityville of London, happening around the same time, got so mm-hmm. much press, mm-hmm. the family got a lot of attention. They've made BCC or like Sky TV movies and documentaries about this case. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those hauntings of the 20th century that a lot of people don't believe in, but a lot of people think there's really something there, you know? And I kind of...
Do you believe that they believe it? They weren't hoaxing it?
I do. They're one of the reporters that I read a story of was like, Janet's completely consistent. Like, they were like, I interviewed her over a couple years on this story, and she was always consistent, never wavered from the story. And I think, like, it's totally normal for two girls that are like, this has now consumed their life, to fuck with the paranormal investigators who come over when it's a slow day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure,
why
sure.
wouldn't you? Sure. You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that some of that stuff just damned any credibility of the case. There's obviously like no real controlled experiment here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all sort of like, it happened. But I think they believed it, kind of like the kids from Amityville. Whether it was happening or not, they believed it was happening, you know, or they believed the narrative mm-hmm. that started to happen around them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Huh.
I don't know. Burl?
Yeah.
Well, spooky, you man. Know what it is. It's real spooky.
do know that.
It's just.
What do you think? Yeah.
Go ahead. What were you saying?
No, I was just, I'm interested in what both of you guys think, other than, you know.
Yeah. I think it's like, to have something like that happen to you as a child has got to be kind of traumatic. But then the plus side of it, something happening to you that young, is that you're like, oh, well, maybe this is what life is. You know, maybe life is, you know, getting possessed every 10 years, every decade of your life. You know what I mean? It's so strange to have something like that happen to you so young and then have it, of course, you know, follow you throughout the rest of your life and then have to go into a mental institution for a time because it like, really scarred you, you know? Ugh. I wonder if she was conscious when that man's voice was, you know, when she was possessed and his voice is coming out of
she
it,
said she couldn't remember a lot of it, and that her she like her mom wouldn't let her see some of those pictures and wouldn't let her listen to the tapes, and it was like only later that she listened to them and was like, oh fuck, that's fucked up.
Right, sure.
It's like the ultimate, like the like night after, like, ooh, that was me.
You're like, ah. Like,
I did what last night?
No, it was me, Bill.
It was Bill.
Yeah,
sitting in a chair in the corner, eating me curds and whey.
Wait a minute! Did Brill turn into an 11-year-old English girl?
Yeah, what's happening?
Ask me no questions, I'll tell you no lies.
Riley, where are you coming down on the Enfield Poltergeist from this like 10-minute presentation that you've been given?
I mean, I feel like I have sympathy for this girl that had this possession experience, because whatever it was, it seems pretty genuine. Mm-hmm. Is it a case of ramping up hysteria? Is it a case of some sort of, I don't know. I can never get my head around the, like, they just did it to fuck with people.
Right.
Get in the news. Like, I'm just like, but who would, like, why? Like, no, it just doesn't make sense. Like, people are just too lazy to even do that. Like, mm-hmm. why? I would never, I'd be like, ugh, no, I'd rather just hang out. And I don't know. That just doesn't, that never adds up for me. It never makes sense.
It's always added stress.
Yeah, so it's like something is going on, and then it's that same question we always get down to, where it's like, well, where's the line then between, you know, just the human experience and the bizarreness of consciousness and the paranormal, and you know, what is a demon, what is a possession? I don't know, but I mean, something happened to the point that we're still talking about it.
Yeah, and I don't think it was a demon. I think the movies have made it into a demon. I think it was probably a ghost.
Sensationalized it, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like, maybe they just like strengthened, opened a gateway for Bill to come through using that Ouija board, and suddenly he was like communicating, you know, and the more they talked to it, the stronger he got, you know,
right?
Because they feed off that like acknowledgement and conversation, and you know what I mean, kind of goes all the way back to the Bell Witch stuff that we learned back in like the fucking second episode of this series, you know.
Right. Yeah. And if anywhere is haunted, it's, you know, it's jolly old England, right? Yeah.
That's right. That place is as old as time. We talked about
that a couple weeks ago. It's haunted as fuck.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
China's as old as time. That's like just a little younger, but still old. Still real old.
Still old. Still old. Yeah. Probably a lot of ghosts there too.
Ghosts everywhere, you guys.
You know when they spell old with an E, it's old.
Ah, that's the extra old.
Well, that wraps up our story of High Strangeness and our Halloween episode for this year. But guess what, guys? The fun is going to continue into next week, even though it'll be early November. We're giving you one more episode before we take a little break until the new year. That, just a reminder, new stuff will be dropping in the feed every week. We're going to be doing some Patreon unlocks. We're going to be doing some bonus stuff. So keep subscribing, keep listening. And if you're a subscriber to The Other Side, Riley and I, maybe Bryce, if we ever hear from him again, we'll be doing, we'll keep the Other Side will keep going uninterrupted. That never changes. Okay. So, stick with us, keep subscribing. Come back next week. We got a brand new episode for you to wrap up the spooky season. A little spooky season dessert, if you would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
The final candy corns.
Yes. Oh, the bottom.
Yes. The final candy corns.
We won't let next week's episode go into the trash without picking those beautiful candy corns out of it first.
Pick them one by one.
BCC just for podcast. Bigfoot candy corn podcast.
Ooh, spin off.
Love it. Burl Moseley, thank you for being a guest on the show. Where can people follow you? Where can people find your work?
Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Burl Moseley, BURLMOSELEY. You can find my work on your television screens and your movie screens. Visit imdb.com for the full list. Find some of my like really random old sketches on YouTube. Not on TikTok yet, but hey, next year's a new year, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, maybe us old farts will get talked into TikTok at some point.
Yeah, maybe I'll get talked into TikTok. We'll see.
Talked into ticking. Fantastic. You can follow me at McMills on Instagram and Twitter, at Bigfoot Collectors Club on Instagram, and Bigfoot Pod on Twitter. Of course, subscribe to BCC The Other Side or Patreon at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club. For $5 a month, you'll get 3 to 5 bonus episodes. Thanks again to Burl. Bryce, if you're out there, we miss you. We love you.
Love you, man.
We hope you're okay wherever you are. That was a weird message we got a couple weeks ago, but I guess that's, I don't know. You know what? We'll keep trying. I'm going to talk to Mayor. We're going to get the task force on it. Maybe I should call in some paranormal investigators. Who knows? But all right.
The lines are open, Bryce.
Lines are open, guys.
I'll leave a radio tuned to static tonight if you want to reach out.
That sounds good. Hashtag Where's Bryce, everybody, if you got leads. Burl, thanks again. Good night, everyone. And
go get regressed.
This is Ghostface calling for Bryce. If I call you and you don't pick up the phone, I'm going to gut you like a fish.
Whoa.
I don't know how he patched in here, guys, but thank you for everything and good night. Boy, that was crazy.
Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hello? Listeners? Can you hear me? It's Bryce. I need help. I'm trapped in a strange and mysterious place, and I'm not alone. Save me. Oh, my God.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible. And if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.